Blog Talk Radio.
Vision of the future.
Ta-da!
A house?
Come on, let me give you the tour. Very first one on the cul-de-sac.
This is the living room, where you can live it up. TV room, dining room, planties room, kitty cat room. And out back, a double-decker porch swing, so we can always hang together. What do you think?
It's going to attract aliens and get destroyed.
I just thought we could rebuild the future, make everything awesome again.
Emmett, you gotta stop pretending everything is awesome. It isn't. Every morning you walk through town singing that terrible, annoying, manufactured pop song.
That song really seems to upset you.
Nope.
You've got to stop pretending everything is awesome. Welcome, everybody, to Cinema Royale. I am Travis Hobson of the Punch Drunk Critics, and it feels like I've been away forever, and that's probably because I have been. It's been almost a month since I've done an episode of Cinema Royale. I was sick for a while, and I went away to Sundance for a while, and even before then, things have been kind of sporadic as I've been preparing for this other show that I'm going to be doing on Twitch in a couple weeks with my Punch Drunk partner, John Nolan, and so everything's kind of gotten away from me, but I'm happy to be here again today to talk about the Lego Movie 2. And what men want. It's not what women want. That was the Mel Gibson movie from, I think, 2000. What Men Want is like a gender-flipped remake of that movie. And it stars Taraji P. Henson. So we're going to talk about that one, too. And I normally, under most circumstances, I wouldn't even have gone to see What Men Want. Except I have to, because I have to talk about it on Monday on WETA Around Town. So I had to go see it. You know, so it's been seen, so I might as well talk about it. And my friend Anna Buchdahl is going to come on here from Cinema Clash. She's going to join me to talk about both of those films. I'm sure she's seen some other things that I didn't bother to go see, like Cold Pursuit, which is the Liam Neeson movie, the remake, which is an American remake of a movie that I actually liked, and I can't think of the title of it right now. My brain's kind of everywhere. I'll ask her to get her opinion on that as well. And at about 12:30, my friend Karen Peterson from Award Circuit is going to call in. We're gonna recap the Sundance Film Festival, because there were a lot of films that were there this year that I think could emerge this year. I don't know how many are going to emerge as Oscar contenders, though. But I think there's a number of them that could be mainstream hits, or at least theatrical hits. So I'm curious to get her opinion on that. So we'll do that in about 30 minutes. But I don't want to waste too much time. I want to get Hannah's opinion on the Lego Movie 2. So let me bring her in now. Hannah, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, Travis. How are you?
I'm all right. Thanks for calling in.
You bet.
I feel like you haven't been on here in a while, so it's good to have you back.
Well, you haven't been here in a while.
It's true. I have not been here in a while, but even before then, I hadn't had you on in a while, so it's good to have you back. This is a pretty busy week for early February, but we're only going to talk about some of them. We're not going to talk about everything. We're going to start off talking about the Lego Movie 2, the second part, which is a sequel to the hit 2000. I think what year was that? What year was the first
14?
Movie? 2014. It's been mm-hmm. that long. Wow. God,
5 years later.
Jesus. Yeah, and I know the movie takes place 5 years later, but I couldn't remember if it was actually 5 years. That's crazy. And this one finds Emmett, once again voiced by Chris Pratt, and Lucy, Wildstyle, voiced by Elizabeth Banks. She and some of the other gang, including Lego Batman, get kidnapped by the Duplos, which their queen is voiced by Tiffany Haddish, who has plans for them. So Emmett has to venture off to rescue them, joined by Rex Dangervest, who is an action hero sort of based on all of Chris Pratt's most iconic characters. Pretty clever, the way I think they came up with him. And, you know, and this one, I think the reviews for it have been sort of mixed compared to the original. You know, you've seen, I don't know how many different ways critics can say everything's not awesome in their headline.
Exactly.
But I saw it about a million times, including myself. I think I did it too. So, but
I'm probably
but
guilty too.
Yeah, I think we're all guilty. It was just too easy. and none of us are creative enough to come up with something different, which is why we write.
Well, they put that bug in our ear. It's the movie's own fault.
It is true. And one thing the movie does have going for it is that it does have more catchy tunes in it, more earworms in this movie, just like the first one did. But I actually enjoyed this one more than I thought it would. I wasn't sure if I would like it. And I think mainly because the first one was such a surprise. I don't think anybody expected the first movie to be great as it was. And so you go into this one and you're kind of braced for it a little bit. You're kind of prepared. So there's no shock value to it being a good movie. But at the same time, it's also just a good movie. It's not great the way the first one was. Mm-hmm. I still laughed quite a bit, but I also found the story to be not quite as engaging this time. But what were your thoughts on the Lego Movie 2?
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree, because I think the first one, you can never compete when something is just so surprisingly original and clever and refreshing as the first one. But I also really like Lego Batman in 2017. That one to me was also fun, because I still think he's really just the best character. And Will Arnett is just the brooding, Cape Crusader bachelor in this one is just fun. So I completely agree. It's not totally awesome, but it's still so much better than a lot of the other things we get that you kind of have to put that in perspective.
Yeah. I
totally enjoyed it, but I didn't love it.
Yeah, and some of the new additions to the cast, like Tiffany Haddish, I love her. I think she does a good job as I can't even pronounce what the queen's name
Queen
was.
Queen Whatever Wanabi.
Thank you very much. I thought she was a good addition, but but the story for me in this one felt very, I don't know. I would say linear, but it was very simple. Like it got into the story very quickly, and it didn't feel quite as wild and spontaneous as the first one was.
Well, and it's also trying to integrate the live action kids more than the first one, which just is sort of that final reveal in the first one where you realize that there's like a real child sort of manipulating the action. This one, there's like this brother and sister, and they kind of weave in and out of what's happening in the real household. And I don't think it worked as well in this one.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. How did you feel? Like, for me, it felt like occasionally it would grind things to a halt for me.
Mm-hmm.
When they're doing the Lego stuff, it's usually very fun and kind of energetically paced. But then it would pull back, and all of a sudden you're watching these two kids argue, and you're like, yeah, okay. I mean, yeah, it's cool. One of them is Brooklyn Prince from the Florida Project, which is really cool to see her in something else. Kind of looked like she was wearing the same clothes from the Florida Project, but that's another story.
She got taller, though.
She did get taller. Our friend Jen Chaney didn't even recognize her. She does look older. She's directing her own movies
for
now. So, yeah, she's about moving up. But that stuff didn't quite work for me as much. It was really kind of odd also, the way they were, the kind of the tone of them. Like Maya Rudolph would come in as the mom, and she was pretty funny. But then it was also kind of weird because, you know, Will Ferrell was just kind of this disembodied voice. kind of like say something from downstairs or from another room. It just felt strange to me, like kind of off compared to everything else.
Yeah, it didn't, it wasn't really seamlessly integrated in the best way it could be. But I do like that it's fast-paced enough that if something isn't working, they move past it pretty quick or throw a song at you. And yeah. So you never have too much time to think that, oh, you know, that wasn't funny or this isn't working, because they'll pretty quickly get to something that does work. And it's just, you know, even just, again, I always come back to the Batman character. Every time Batman and the Queen Wanabi are talking, to me, those are the most fun moments. I love Chris Pratt, but, you know, he sort of has a dual role voicing in this one. And, you know, and he's still sort of the glue for all these players. But to me, if you took Batman out of the equation, you'd lose a lot.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think they latched on to the success of the Lego Batman movie and to that character by having him be more central to the story this time. Like, the Queen takes a liking to him kind of out of the blue. Like, it doesn't really make sense that he's the one that she would choose, like, to be her focus. So it kind of felt like, okay, they're recognizing that Batman is super popular and this is their way of making him more a part of the story, which is fine, you know, and I'm okay with that. But it also kind of felt like that was a role for Emmett. Like, that was a role like that Emmett probably should have had in a way.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That would have been really interesting if Emmett had been the one that that she wanted to marry and maybe Lucy got jealous. So,
yeah.
You know, there you go. You might have maybe you should have written the second part.
No, it wouldn't have been nearly as funny. But no, it just felt weird to me, and it's just it felt strange because Emmett kind of felt like a passenger in this story a little bit. Like, there are so many so many characters that are going on here. The story's separated because you got one group that has been taken away, and him, you know, is on his way to them with Rex Dangerous. So it kind of felt sidelined a little bit, and that changed towards the end of the movie. But on the way, I was kind of like, yeah, you know, and it didn't help that they made it so clear early on that Emmett didn't really do anything in that first movie. It was like, it was all her. It made him not seem like such an important character. And I don't know if that was intentional by them or not, but I kind of felt it. It felt different to me in that way.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, but I do love that they throw in so many pop culture references and catchy tunes. And yeah, I won't. This one won't stand in my memory for too long. But and I'm wary of where they go next, because I think, you know, I don't think that Ninjago movie did also well.
It didn't.
Yeah. And so they have to be careful, because the gimmick itself is wearing kind of thin, and to preserve it, they just need to make sure they have a really solid plot.
Yeah, and I think that what they're going to have to realize is that they're going to have to limit this franchise. You know, if they do another one of these in 5 more years, it'll probably be fine. And then maybe do another Lego Batman, you know, but I don't know if you want to stretch this. I don't know if you want to stretch this Lego thing beyond that.
No, I don't think it gets dangerous.
Yeah, and Warner Brothers has so many properties that they don't really need to. They don't need to like stretch this thing out too far. You know, you just look at the movie itself and see all the characters that they have, from Lord of the Rings to the Justice League characters who keep popping up. I thought it was funny every time original Aquaman showed up, because he's so lame.
Oh, yeah, I loved Aquaman.
Compared to Jason Momoa's Aquaman, the original Aquaman looks so lame. But they have so many, and I think the danger is that they may try to take some of those other properties. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to do, like, a Lego Lord of the Rings or something. Like, that's the kind of thing I'm, like, afraid of.
Yeah.
Know, like, they keep trying to expand it in that way, and they really just need to keep it focused. And I think Ninjago was, like, one step too far.
Yeah, absolutely. And it made me really look more forward to Toy Story 4, because I felt a little bit of the Toy Story type of thing going on in this particular Lego movie. But I think what Toy Story does so well is they only came out when they had something to say. And and so they've been very careful about preserving that franchise. And so I think if they're going to take any lesson from that whole Toy Story way of doing things, hopefully they'll learn a little bit from what they're doing, and hopefully Toy Story 4 will be as good as I'm hoping.
Yeah, I know. I'm still scared. That's still one of the most emotional movie screenings I ever attended was Toy Story 3. I mean, I think
I love it.
I love it too, but I think I remember like critics like, you know, practically in tears as that movie was coming to an end, because we didn't think we were going to see anymore. We thought that was it. That was the end. And I still think it probably should have been, even if this one turns out to be good, just because Toy Story 3 had just such a perfect ending. But, and I don't know where it goes from here. I just don't know.
But, I mean, we'll see. But I had that fear with 3, you know, wondering where it could go. But yeah, that one holds a special place in my heart because my nephew is aging at the same rate as Andy. And so I took him to Toy Story 2 when he was a toddler. And then, you know, all those years later when he was the same age as Andy going off to college. So it just is really meant something special. And now I'm looking forward to taking my now 23-year-old nephew to Toy Story 4. And it's just, it's frightening to see just time, you know, the time warp. So so we'll see. But it's that one holds a special place, and I hope they don't screw it up.
Yeah. And so far, what we've seen has been pretty funny. But the thing about the Toy Story movies is that they're more than just, you know, comedy movies. There's, like, a real emotional impact that they have. Like you said, you know, we've kind of aged along with these movies. And I remember my old toys, you know, and what happened to them, you know, as I got older, and passing them along to my sisters or giving them away when I felt like I had gotten too old for them. And then looking back on it, like, damn, I wish I still had those, you know? So I go back and I buy them again now, you know, but you know, so those movies are more than just about being funny. So that, I think that's the thing that I'm most concerned about, is what do they have to say? You know, what is it going to say this time? Like, I know I'm going to laugh, but what's it going to say? So.
Well, but I think the original Lego movie in 2014 had a little more of a emotional poignancy in it than they were able to do with this one. And yeah, so I think that with the Legos themselves and just with the shtick, it's tough. It's tough to kind of keep that momentum going. But so all that being said, the second part is still good.
Still pretty fun. It's still pretty fun, absolutely. All right, let's move on to the next movie we're going to talk about, which is What Men Want. Before we start talking about that, let's hear a quick clip.
I feel weird after last night.
Yeah, that's what happens when tequila meets desperation.
Okay, stop doing that.
Stop doing what?
Talking without moving your mouth and saying things you shouldn't be saying to your boss.
I swear on my life I would never say anything disrespectful or inappropriate to you, ever.
Which is more than I can say for you.
Right there. You just did it. You said more than I can say for you.
I heard you say it.
But I didn't say it.
Holy crap. Can you hear my inner thought?
I can hear your inner thought. Ah!
All right, so that was a clip from What Men Want. As you can tell, I'm not all super excited about this one. But I have to be honest, Anna, I didn't despise it the way I thought I would. I thought I would go in there and just be, like, miserable the entire time. I saw it really early yesterday morning. It was a pretty decent-sized crowd in there for a 9 a.m. movie, which was surprising. And, you know, it's Taraji P. Henson, who I love. I don't love all of her choices. Especially in movies that put her in the centerpiece role. But this is a remake of the Mel Gibson film, I think 2000. I think that was the year that movie came out, or somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. And she was a woman who gains the ability to read men's inner thoughts. And, you know, it's got some funny moments in it. It's not particularly clever about how she uses this ability. She's a sports agent. She wants to get ahead, so she uses it for that more than anything else. I was surprised, though. I thought perhaps with everything that's going on in the world right now, that a gender-flipped movie like this, where a woman gets to read men's inner thoughts, would perhaps have something more to say than the Mel Gibson movie did. But ultimately, it's just she needs to be a nicer person. which I think is a disappointing. it is about as disappointing a message. Somebody else who wrote this story could have come up with something much more profound to say, considering the Me Too movement, Time's Up, and everything else that's going on right now in this new wave of feminism. Something else could have been done with this concept than this movie did with it. Like, nothing was done with it. Is it funny at times? Yes. I laughed a lot at Tracy Morgan, who's this kind of clownish LeVar Ball type character. But otherwise, you know, the movie's fine. And I think I'm disappointed by that. That is just fine. On the other hand, what happened to Adam Shankman? Like, when did he just start making movies like this now? Like, wasn't he like the guy who did like musicals and stuff? Like, didn't he used to do stuff like that? Like musicals and things like that? Like big musicals and stuff? And now he's just
I don't remember. But, I mean, the thing is, Nancy Myers did the original. And nobody can compete. You can't do a gender-flipping romantic comedy the way Nancy Myers could in 2000. You know, it's just not possible. And so right. I agree with you 100% that I came out of this movie going, well, it wasn't a total waste of time, but it was a disappointment because aside from the funny moments that pop up, it's completely formulaic. The plot twists I saw coming from 100 miles away. Some of the character turns just don't track at all. And when I think sports agent romantic drama of any sort, my head goes back to Jerry Maguire. And you can't – Jerry Maguire is the gold standard of the sports agent chick flick. And so this one just couldn't even come close. Even though it doesn't suck, it's not great.
The sports agent thing, it could have been any job, right? It could have been any profession. It didn't even really have to be sports.
They were trying to be in that sort of, you know, it's the woman in the man's world and trying to crack the boys club and, you know, stay in your lane. You handle the women athletes and let the guys do the guy thing. And so, you know, I think it was, but that's just it. Everything felt so contrived. They threw in every cliche in the book. You've got the bachelorette party going on. So you got the gal pals. You've got the poor assistant who's completely, you know,
the
abused.
The gay assistant.
Yes.
You know, just like you know, I know you were there at the movie, the Isn't It Romantic that we went to last week. And we're not going to comment on that movie yet because we're not supposed to. But you know, it totally makes fun of that particular trope, like the gay assistant best friend who's just. it's like, okay, whatever.
Yeah. So it was fascinating. You saw these two movies within, you know, for me, within 48 hours or 72 hours. And it just reminded me that What Men Want was trying to be threw in every cliche and yet was not mocking that. Whereas at least Isn't It Romantic attempts to mock it. This one, I wanted so much more out of it. And I like Taraji P. Henson. I mean, and actually the guy who plays her love interest, Aldis Hodge, both of them were in Hidden Figures.
Yeah, so they were
actually both in Hidden Figures, which was interesting to see.
As love interests in that movie.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, and so Taraji P. Henson was a good choice, I think, for somebody trying to find somebody who could do the drama and the comedy. But the material failed her, so I think she's better than what she was given to work with in this particular film.
I thought she had some good scenes with Richard Roundtree as her father. I thought those were some good moments that she had with him. She didn't read his mind all that much compared to every other guy. She seemed to read their minds all the time. But whatever, okay. But I thought when I was watching it, I kept thinking, this is the third film in I think a year that has had a woman getting knocked on the head and waking up to some alternate reality. And I'm like, what's going on with it? And I think most of these are women are written by women, which is like, I don't understand what they're doing here, but this is the third time I've seen this, you know, and I don't know what they're trying to, why can't they find some other way of doing this? But they all had to take some big knock on the head. It was Amy Schumer. She took it. last year and whatever that movie was that she was in, and I Feel Pretty. You know, she fell off the machine and took a knock on the head, and isn't it romantic? Rebel Wilson takes a knock on the head, and now in this one, she Charles Biennes takes a knock on the head, and they wake up, and the world is better for them. And I'm like, what's going on? What's going on?
And then you spend 88 minutes, 2 hours waiting for the next knock to bring them back to reality. So it's getting old. At least Mel Gibson, I think, was like fried in the bathtub, you know, when he drops a hairdryer or something. So you know, it's like there are more creative ways to sort of shock people into an alternate reality.
Yeah.
So I agree. It's time to come up with a better way to do it.
All right. What Men Want is I think it's perfectly okay. I think it's doing well at the box office today too. I didn't look at the box office numbers yet, but I think it got off to a pretty good start.
It'll be great on an airplane or as a rental too.
$19 million. So yeah, it's doing very well. All right. So I'm pretty sure you saw a couple of things that I didn't see. Cold Pursuit. Did you check that out with Liam Neeson?
I did check out Cold Pursuit. Mm-hmm.
How was it?
And I think you mentioned you saw the original In Order of Disappearance with Stellan Skarsgård.
Yep.
It's that. It's the exact same movie. I mean, it was like deja vu throughout the entire thing. And I didn't love In Order of Disappearance because it's just not my genre of choice because it's, you know, just this sort of very brutal revenge thriller. And so I think if somebody had asked me, you know, a few years back, well, you saw In Order of Disappearance, if you had to do a remake by, you know, who would you put in the Skarsgård role? And it would be like, oh, Liam Neeson would be the right choice. Mm-hmm. But it's the exact same director. It's the exact same narrative. It's the exact same plot devices. Instead of a snowplow operator in Norway, you've got a snowplow operator in Colorado. So it really is exactly the same film. So you really didn't miss anything. Even the first name, it's like instead of being named Nils Dickman, I think was the original character's name, he's now like Nels Coxman. Now he's Nels Coxman. So like what the heck is that? So
yeah,
it's a total cookie cutter remake. Yeah.
That and our screening for it was at just some asinine time, and I think I was at
it was. It was a freezing cold day in a freezing cold theater, and so it was with, I think, five of us in there. So, the fact that a lot of folks did not have a chance to see Cold Pursuit doesn't surprise me, and unfortunately, Liam Neeson didn't.
They weren't doing another way to make us want to see it. I mean, you're going to put a screening at that time, because wasn't it at like 2 p.m. or something? I mean, it was.
It was a weird time. It was definitely a weird time.
I think it was in Utah during that time that it was out. So I had already seen the original. I figured it wasn't going to be that much different.
it's not, and so it's got a very high body count, and there's all these creative ways that people die, and it's all about trying to avenge the death of his son, the murder of his son by some drug kingpin.
Yeah.
And so if you're not a very discerning Liam Neeson action fan person, like you go and see anything with Liam Neeson in it playing a, you know, guy with particular skills who's going after people, then you might be okay with this. But if you saw An Order of Disappearance, you come out of there thinking, I already saw this movie. Why do we need a cookie cutter remake by the same director? So there's not. I mean,
I
it looks
like
the
that,
same.
Though. I like it when the director goes back and do the American remake. But I get where you're coming from, and I don't think the thing is most people won't have seen In Order of Disappearance. Like none of them will have seen it, so it's probably okay that's the case. I'm very curious to see how people react to the After the Wedding remake, which they did, which is going with Julianne Moore and Michelle Williams. Where they kind of flip the genders on that one too. So I think that there's going to be a big reaction to that because it changed the genders in that movie, completely changed the story, like in a totally different way. So that would be interesting to see how people react to that.
We just saw The Upside a few weeks ago or a month ago. which was the remake of also a better, you know, which was decent, but a remake of a much better foreign film.
Yeah.
So it's like I always tell people you got to see The Untouchables first or instead. But if you didn't see it, if you didn't see the first one, then The Upside is a solid film. But there's still differences between the two. But I'm telling you, Cold Pursuit looks, feels, everything is absolutely the same.
All right. Well, Hannah, this has been fantastic as always having you on to talk about some movies with me. We'll have to do it again very soon.
Always a pleasure.
Everybody, check out Hannah and Charlie on Cinema Clash. You guys still going strong, huh?
It's working. I'm seeing it's crazy how many movies. I mean, you can go and listen to Cinema Clash for our talk about the Oscar shorts because you don't hear many people really kind of laying the landscape for what you're going to choose in the Oscar pool for the shorts. So we have a whole big.
It's interesting. What? I went to go see the Oscar shorts last night, and they were sold out.
You're kidding.
Sold out. Nope.
Wow.
I drove out to East Street to go see them specifically, and they were sold out. And I was like, "You're kidding! I didn't think I had to buy my ticket early. I figured I'd have no problem." They were completely sold out. It was a madhouse in there yesterday. I was like, "What the hell is going on?" But yeah,
that's wild because they're fun. I mean, they're interesting, but the live action ones are insanely distressing, harrowing to watch, really depressing. 4 out of 5 of them. So, you know, it's a tough watch, but yeah, they're always just like these cool mini movies. And I think they're worth checking out.
All right. I'm going to go and try to check them out sometime during this week or maybe next weekend if they're still there.
Or maybe somebody will send you the links.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure I can find somebody who can send it to me. Hannah, thank you again. Everybody go check out Hannah and Charlie on Charlie Jewel on Cinema Clash here on Blog Talk Radio as part of Critical, the Movie Critics Network. Thank you, Hannah. We'll do this again soon.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
All right. We'll take a quick break. And when we come back, we've got Aaron Peterson of Award Circuit coming in to talk Sundance with me. So we'll be right back.
I woke up with stress on my head. Gotta do what I gotta do to survive or to keep the fam fed. By any means, I'ma get that bread. Lord save those who oppose the know the sky turned red. Same color as my eyes from the smoke in hell. Got me seeing the dead as I walk in hell. Demons and minions breathing the air I breathe. Reptiles, animals wild. Plague, disease, the man-made ways.
Oh, man, I missed that gangrene bump right there, man. I haven't played that joint in weeks. I have missed it. I'm going to listen to it. As soon as the show is over, I'm going to listen to the whole thing on my drive when I leave out of here. Oh, I can't wait. That's just me reminiscing about one of my favorite hip-hop tracks. I am happy to have on my friend, who I met at Sundance just a week or two ago, Karen Peterson, kind of recap the Sundance Film Festival, pick off some of our favorites, some of the movies we did not like. Karen, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I am good. Thanks for calling in to Cinema Royale. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you managed to come back from Sundance and you didn't get the Sundance flu, or did you get it like everybody else does?
I got like the sinus infection thing, so not quite a flu, but still not fun.
Yeah, I actually managed to escape it this time. I think I told you I usually get sick after. I got sick before, and so I think my body was like, we'll let you off the hook this time. So I managed to get away. Normally, I'm seriously bedridden for about 2 weeks after Sundance, and this time I was perfectly fine. But you stayed at Sundance longer than me this time, so you may have seen some things that I didn't see. And this is an interesting year. I was looking over the award winners for this year and realizing that I didn't see most of them.
Same. I don't know what happened.
I know. Like, what the hell were we doing at Sundance exactly? Like, we didn't see anything. Like Clemency won for Best Dramatic. And I was like, oh, I remember thinking I wanted to see that. And then I was like, okay, I'll just let it go. You know, Alfre Woodard, Aldous Hodge. And I didn't go see it. And then it wins Best Dramatic. And I feel bad that I didn't see it. So did you have
to? I know, same.
It's own either.
I didn't see it either. Nope.
Yeah, Brittany wins a marathon. Brittany runs a marathon one. And it won
I
the
did
audience
see that one.
You did see that one, though. That's the Jillian Bell one that I wanted to see, but I was tired. So I just didn't go. talk to me about Brittany Runs a Marathon.
Well, I dragged myself up the mountain at 8 o'clock in the morning to go see it because they added a PI screening. So I was just like, this is my chance. It's really funny, but it really does hit those emotional moments that make a comedy really stand out. So you've got Jillian Bell, who is really funny, and I think a lot of people like her and they just don't realize it because they don't realize who she is. But I mean, she's been in like the 22 Jump Street and some other things. But
I'm a big fan of Jillian Bell.
Oh, she's great. She's so great. And I'm glad that she's finally really breaking through and getting onto more people's radar, because she's just she really deserves it. So this movie, she starts off, she's this girl she's in her late 20s. She's kind of not really going anywhere in life, you know, like a lot of people at that age are. And she has kind of a wake-up call and realizes she needs to make some changes. And so the movie goes through sort of a year of her life and the people that she meets along the way. And you know, so, I mean, describing it that way, it kind of sounds like every other inspirational, life-changing movie that you see, but there's just something really special about it. And I think the really special factor is Jillian Bell. She's just great.
Yeah, I love her in Workaholics and pretty much everything she does. I just think she's really funny. So this is more than just a comedy. This is more of a dramedy.
Yeah, I would say, but it definitely is more on the comedy end of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I was trying to think of the film that I like her best. I think it's Rough Night, which is a movie it didn't do all that great when it was out, but I'm a big fan of Rough Night because I love like one hard night kind of movies. You know, like one evening where just everything goes to hell and a group of friends need to get through it. Movies like Judgment Night and, you know, and Rough Night and a whole bunch of other stuff that are movies like that. Those are some of my favorite movies. And I just love her in that as the sort of the frisky member of the group. I think she does frisky very well. I was surprised by some of these movies that did really well. But what were some of the ones that you saw? Like, what was your favorite movie that you saw at Sundance this year? I'm assuming it wasn't
You know, that's pretty close. That's pretty high up there. But actually, my favorite, the one that I just have not stopped talking about when everybody asks me what I liked at Sundance, the first movie I talk about is Little Monsters.
Okay. I saw that too. This is the one with Lupita Nyong'o as a kindergarten teacher whose class is attacked by an outbreak of zombies. It's a very different role for her. I will say that. It's very different. Her roles have almost all been very serious. This one she's playing, it's the movie's goofy. Like, right from the start, it's super goofy. Although her character isn't necessarily goofy. She's playing it pretty straight. But yeah, this is a very different role for her. But tell me about your reasons why you like Little Monsters so much. Cause I think you and I may differ on it just a little bit.
Yeah, well, I think the biggest reason is because of the fact that it's such a different role for Lupita. She's so great. And I think the fact that she is playing the character so serious and straight is why it works so well. But, I mean, just watching her with that ukulele singing Shake It Off, you know, and just like,
those are
okay,
fun
kids, we're, Yeah, we're going to just ignore the carnage happening outside. We're just going to keep singing, you know. It's just, it's such a funny movie. Like, I don't think anything else made me laugh as hard in, not just at Sundance, but in the last several months. It was just so funny. And Josh Gad was hilarious.
Josh Gad is great.
He ad-libbed most of his lines. Most of that was improv.
That's perfect.
And, yeah.
It's perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Josh Gad
plays him make fun of some other guy and like calling someone else being fat was hilarious. Oh my god.
Yeah, Josh Gad to me was my favorite part of that movie, and I like Lupita in it too. The I was kind of taking or leave it with him. I kind of wish that role was recast with someone maybe, but yeah, Josh Gad is sort of I kind of want to come across between Barney and Mr. Rogers. Until the outbreak happens, and then he's just a total jerk in every way possible. He's fantastic. I don't know what I was expecting from the movie, and maybe this is where my disappointment comes in. I didn't know what to expect from it necessarily. You look at the teaser images for it, and you get this blood covered Lupita Nyong'o, and it seems like it's going to be this gory, gruesome sort of movie. And there are aspects of it that are gory and gruesome, but I don't know, something about it wasn't clicking with me the way it should. I still gave it a positive review, and I do think it's a good movie. I think there's just a slight bit of disappointment there. But yeah, I see where you're coming from. I got you.
Yeah. Definitely. I think this is definitely one that is going to have a very solid cult following. Like, you know, like people who love Shaun of the Dead or Zombieland or movies like that are going to love this movie.
Yeah, this is going to be very interesting to see how it gets marketed. And I can't remember who picked it up. I can't remember who picked that one up. But I'm very curious to see how they present it. If they do present it in that way as sort of a Shaun of the Dead or something like that. Because done the wrong way, it could come out with a thud like Anna and the Apocalypse or something like that, you know, which is a movie that I also liked and I thought would do fairly well, and then it just kind of came out and nothing. Neon picked it up. So Neon might be the right distributor for that. Neon and Hulu picked up Luna Lodge.
That's right. It was a joint venture.
Yeah, that's a pretty solid duo for that. I think Neon is pretty good at distributing these kinds of movies for just the right audience. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. What else was it? Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Oh, no, I was just agreeing with you, yeah.
Oh, you're just going to say, Travis, you're great. Thank you. You're right, Travis.
Well, I thought that went without saying.
Of course. one of the things that struck me about this year, and it was kind of like this last year too, I wasn't sure that I saw a movie that was a surefire Oscar movie. The only one that I thought came close was The Report. Did you ever get a chance to check that one out, The Report?
I missed it. Yeah, I didn't get to see it.
The Report is stars Adam Driver, and it's written and directed by Scott Z. Burns, the guy who works pretty frequently with Steven Soderbergh. And it's about the investigation into the CIA torture program, which does not sound like a fun topic, and it's not. And it's not a fun movie, but it's a serious movie, and it's an important movie. And, you know, and it's not dry, which is the thing that I had an issue with Official Secrets, which is the Keira Knightley movie, which is kind of speaks the same language as that. You know, they're dealing with the same time period. They're both dealing with some bullshit that Dick Cheney probably did, you know. But Official Secrets is very dry, and it's kind of dull and kind of flat, despite all the great actors in it. But The Report just has this sort of energy behind it, and it's really exciting. It's almost like a thriller, even though there's nobody chasing him around with a gun or anything like that. You know, he's not on the verge of getting arrested or anything like that. It's nothing like that. It's just a guy doing it, putting his nose to the grindstone and doing the work. But it's got something to it. And I know they're planning on releasing it in the fall, which to me puts it in the conversation for the Oscars. And I think he's going to get nominated. I'm just going to call that now. I think he's going to get nominated. That's like the only movie to me that stood out to me as a possible Oscar film. Did you see any that struck you that way?
Yeah, I agree with you. I didn't really see anything that I thought this is going to make a huge play for awards. There were a couple that I could see maybe like one-off awards. Like I think a film such as Late Night could get in for screenplay or something like that, but that's not going to get, you know, lead actress or best picture or anything like that kind of attention. So
yeah, seems like it has.
Interesting year for that.
Late Night, which is written by Mindy Kaling, and stars her as well, and stars Emma Thompson, is set during a late night TV talk show in which Thompson plays the long-running host. That movie to me seems like it has great mainstream potential. You know, although I'm very curious about that too. You know, it also feels like the kind of movie that could come and go. You know, it could come out and maybe people just don't connect with it. Neither one of them are proven box office draws, Emma Thompson or Mindy Kaling. As much as we may love both of them, at least domestically, they're not proven box office draws. I don't know how that movie's going to play. I'm very curious about that. What do you think its prospects are as a mainstream movie?
It's going to be really interesting because I think the fact that Amazon bought it for such a high price puts a lot more attention on it. And I can see this being a late summer release when, you know, things are kind of slowing down and you're kind of out of the big blockbuster territory. And I think if they do it that way, I think it could pick up, you know, audiences that are looking for something good at that point in the year. And I think that it could do really well. And I think the fact that Amazon put $13 million into it, which is the highest anybody has ever paid for a Sundance film that was directed and written by women, beating out last year's Mudbound, actually. But I think that that shows a lot of confidence that they have in it. And also I think it puts a lot more focus on the movie itself.
I see. The thing is, I think if it comes out late summer, I think it's going to run up against The Farewell, which I think A24, we picked that up for $7 million. I think they're going to try to aim for that same window of time for that movie. Because that seems like, because I think marketed the right way, The Farewell could be this year's The Big Sick. You know, it stars Awkwafina. And this was probably my second favorite movie I saw at the festival. Right behind
The
Report. It's so good. And, you know, Sardar Gafina is a Chinese-American woman whose family travels back to China to kind of be around for a fake wedding that was created just so they could all gather to be around her grandmother, who is terminally ill. But in China, they are not – the doctors are not obligated to tell you your diagnosis. They are not obligated to tell you stuff like that. I found out that it used to be like that here too. But yeah, it's like that in China still today. So what they do is they'll tell the family, and the family will often keep that secret. They'll keep a secret, you know, and they'll just kind of carry that burden. You know, and it makes for a very interesting dynamic as the family's all together trying to keep this secret. And Awkwafina's character, who was mostly raised in America, does not have their ability, really, to keep things secret the way they do. At least she's not good at holding it in. And it makes for some very awkward situations, but also very funny, but also very and emotional moments as well. And I found myself loving this movie, like every minute of it. The premise is so unique. It's nothing I've seen before. And I love movies like this that take a something cultural that I've never heard of, never understood before, and present it to me in a way that's entertaining and funny. And I just adore this film. And I think they're going to try, if they're, at least to me, this is what I would do. I would put this out at the end of summer, right at the beginning of the fall, like right as we're starting to turn the corner into thinking about awards movies. This is when I would put it out. That's what I would do. But then again, that's why I don't have a job in the marketing business. So who knows? But you liked The Farewell as much as I did, I think.
Oh, I did. Yeah, this is actually the first movie I saw. And I thought, man, I'm setting the bar high for my Sundance experience because this movie is great. And I agree with what you were saying. I really like the way that, I mean, families are funny. So this is a drama, but it's also got a lot of humor and heart to it. And I like the fact that they don't ever say, you know, culturally, this is right or that is wrong or one way is better than another. It just presents that, you know, these are just different ways of looking at the world, and that's okay. And I love that it's a true story too, that this is really based on the director and writer's life, Lulu Wang. I love the whole story of how this film even got made in the first place. I don't know if you heard about that, but
I heard about it from someone named Karen Peterson, who told me about it. Go
who
ahead, you can tell the story.
Well, yeah, but I love, because they originally, she'd written a screenplay and she was shopping it around to studios who wanted to turn it into just a hardcore comedy film. And she was just like, no, this is something a lot more personal than that. And so she held off and she turned down a lot of offers because it wasn't, they were wanting her to make the film that she did not want to make. And so she ended up telling the story on This American Life. And when she went on to tell the story, she had had to do even a lot more research than she had already done. And so she learned a lot more about her family and about her own culture. And then she told the story on This American Life, and a couple of producers happened to listen to it and called her up and said, we want you to make your movie the way you wanted to make it. And so that's how she got to do it. And now A24 bought it. I mean, it's amazing.
Wow. Yeah, that's an amazing story. That sounds like the kind of story that box office sleeper hits are made of. Mm-hmm. I would not be surprised if that movie does really, really well, like I was saying. Before we get out of here, there's only got a few minutes left before the show wraps up. Give me one movie that's, you know, not Little Monsters and not The Farewell, that you want people to, that you want to put on people's radars, that you think will be coming out later this year.
That would be a documentary, actually, called Gaza.
Okay.
Did you get a chance to watch that one?
Sounds fun. Tell me about it.
Well, it's actually really depressing.
I'm sure it is with a name like that.
Yeah. So it's really, you know, there's a lot of films, documentaries especially, that go in and show the horrors of you know, political problems in different regions. And this Gaza reminded me a lot of Cries from Syria a year or two ago, where it's really just about, it's not about placing blame on why things have gotten to the point that they are. It's just about showing the reality of the situation. And Gaza focuses on the people that are there that have just basically been ignored and abandoned because of, you know, because of the local politics, but also just because the world has moved on to other, you know, flashier conflicts. And these people are still suffering. By 2020, the UN has said that the Gaza Strip is going to be almost completely uninhabitable. There's almost no safe housing anymore. The electricity goes off for weeks at a time. The water is almost completely polluted. The economy is completely trashed. And it's a humanitarian disaster. And this film is really just about awakening people to realize that there are still just people that live there, that they can't fix their own situation. It takes those of us on the outside to go in there and do something about it. And it's a really powerful documentary that has affected me in a lot of ways. And it's, I haven't stopped thinking about it. It's really well done. The one of the co-directors, who also serves as the cinematographer, Andrew McConnell, he originally went in years ago because he wanted to just do a documentary, like, or a photo essay, because he was a stills photographer, and he just wanted to do something about the surfing community there. And while he was there, it ended up war breaking out, and it just completely changed his trajectory and his goals. And it's really a well-made documentary.
So this didn't win Best Comedy at Sundance. This didn't win a comedy award.
Surprisingly, no.
Okay. I just wanted to double check just to make sure I wasn't missing my feet here. But no, that sounds really powerful. Do you know if it got picked up? Do you know if anybody got that? Or is it a CNN Films or Vice Films?
No one has bought it yet. No one has bought it yet, which is really heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you never know. I'm sure documentaries like that, somebody's going to pick them up. pick it up. It'll probably be like one of the people, one of the groups I just mentioned, CNN Films, Vice.
Yeah.
Vice Films. Somebody will get it for sure.
I think CNN's probably a really good home for it. So I hope that they do.
Yeah. Good. Well, for me, the one movie that I would point out that I think people should check out, other than the ones I already mentioned, I really liked I Am Mother, which is a sci-fi film and stars Hilary Swank, and it's got the voice of Rose Byrne, and I can't remember the girl who plays the central character. Her name slips me at this point. Did you see I Am Mother?
I did. Yeah,
I remember you didn't like it as much as me. I like you anyway, but you didn't like it as much. But yeah, and basically it's about a teenage girl who is raised by her robot mother after basically robots have taken over the world. So he lives in this bunker with a robot, which to me is just an awesome premise. I love that premise. I mean, it's not something that's totally unique, but the way it's done is unique, at least to me, and having this girl be raised by a robot, just taught everything. And then she encounters an actual human played by Hilary Swank, who kind of makes her way into their bunker. And the girl finds out that everything is not as she thought it was, which creates an interesting power dynamic between the three of them as we're trying to figure out what the truth is and what's really going on. And to me, it has this beautiful, icy, kind of cold look. It reminds me of Ex Machina, and I know that's the easy comparison people have made, and I've just made it too. But it's really smart, and I think at least for the sci-fi fans, this has that potential to be a niche hit for them, the kind of movie that people talk about for a long time. Director is Grant Sputor. I don't know if this is directorial debut or not. I don't know him. But I really like the way this movie looks, and I really enjoyed the screenplay by Michael Green as well. So I'm hoping people get a chance to see that. And Netflix got it, so you will have a chance to see it. You'll be able to see it for free, basically. So, and you know what? And considering how people reacted to that Logan Marshall Green sci-fi movie from last year that was on Netflix. Upgrade, which I liked also. I think this has a potential to be kind of a sleeper hit and a big, have big viewership for Netflix whenever they decide to release it. So you knew Upgrade right away. Did you see it? Did you like it?
I saw Upgrade. I thought it was okay. It's funny because I actually liked it.
It was Venom. It's basically Venom before Venom.
Well, I liked it more after I saw Venom. Venom made me retroactively appreciate Upgrade a lot.
I mean, don't you agree? They're kind of just basically the same movie, except one is about a Marvel comic character. It's the same movie. And I would say that Upgrade is the better movie of the two.
You can't convince me that Logan Marshall Green and Tom Hardy are not the same person.
I have not seen them in the same place. So,
exactly.
But they really need to do. They need to do a movie where they play brothers, at the very least.
Yes.
They need to do
that. Would
a movie
be
where
amazing.
They yeah, they should do that. Anyway. All right, so that's kind of our look back at the Sundance Film Festival. And Karen, this has been great. I'm happy to have you making your debut on the show. We'll definitely have to do this again very, very soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so
Everybody
much.
Everybody check out her work over at Award Circuit. Thanks. Ooh, show's about to run out. We've got less than a minute. All right. So time flies. But yes, thank you very much for joining me, Karen. We'll do this again soon. Thank you.
Sounds great. Thank you.
All right. Bye. All right. So like I said, the show is winding down. See, I got to get used to all this stuff again, man. I've been away for too long, and I'm forgetting how to hit buttons and close everything down and managing time is just not working out, but it's fine. Thanks everybody for tuning in to Cinema Royale. I'm Travis Hobson of the Punch Drunk Critics, and this has been Cinema Royale. I will be back again next weekend. I promise. I swear. I'll be back. All right. Thanks for tuning in.